Okay.
Word, helplessness, and tissue lung.
All right, so it's good to be back in Vosa. I hope everybody had a good summer. Fourth year of YPLA, which is amazing. But you guys have completed your chazaka, so now it's there's no turning back now. Exactly.
So it's Shabbat Shnoti Tishvut, you know, 7 years you haven't led. What are you building 7 years? Huh?
We're gonna build
Okay, no, but really, it's really Yasha Koach, Rabbi Steinman, to all of you who are coming, who are keeping it going.
It's
you guys who are keeping it going, and Mirza Hashem, it should keep going and keep doing great, great stuff.
You've been with us since the beginning. You've seen that before.
I remember you when you were a little kid. Okay, so today's shiur, since we are holding a week and a day before Rosh Hashanah, so today's shiur will be on tshuva and about learned helplessness. So, has anybody heard of Martin Seligman? No? Seligman? No? No, Rabbi Steinman, I haven't mentioned him in your classes.
I don't pay attention to books.
Okay. And has anybody heard the concept learned helplessness? Sounds familiar. Okay. So Martin Seligman is one of the most famous psychologists of the last 20, 30 years. He introduced basically a new movement in psychology called positive psychology. Anybody heard of positive psychology?
Yeah.
So it's classically from Freud and all his Talmidim. I'm recording, yeah. Yeah, so classically Freud and all his Talmidim, the early psychologists, they all focused on the negative, right? What are your problems and why did you have the problems and where do they come from? And there wasn't a lot of focus on the positive stuff and how can we increase the positive, okay? So Seligman basically came along and said, you know, we're focusing so much on the negative and it's all about deficiencies and disorders and everything. Let's try to teach people how to think positively, how to better themselves. And so that was most of his research. But his early research, it was on depression, and he was trying to figure out what are the ingredients or what makes people depressed? What are the overall themes or what are the overall characteristics that get people depressed? So he was doing studies with dogs, okay, and he was giving dogs shocks, electrical shocks. For whatever reason, electrical shocks seem to be a preferred method in psychological research, right? You probably heard about it in your psych classes, you probably learned about Milgram, who gave administered shocks, right? That seems to be a preferred method in psych research for whatever reason. Yeah, yeah, it's like one of the classic.
It's not lethal.
It's mildly painful, you know. They probably did it in doses which weren't, which... Yeah, exactly. So
we should protest against
them. So what he did, so listen to this. So he did a lot of studies on these dogs. One study, he took two groups of dogs, okay? One group of dogs, he made a condition where if they pushed a certain lever or a certain button, then they would get shocked. So they could control when they would get their own shocks. So they learned pretty quickly, don't touch the button and we're not going to get shocked. Then he took another group of dogs and he put two dogs together, pairs of dogs, groups of dogs, one dog with the other one. And one dog had control of the button, like they were wearing something around themselves that had control of the button. The other one of the pair did not have control. So basically, the controlling dog would push the button whenever they wanted, and they wouldn't get shocked, but it would actually administer a shock to the other dog that was paired with them, okay? The point of this was to see how the shocked dog, the one who didn't have control, who was getting shocked by the other dog, reacted. So what Seligman saw is that after a while, they basically just stopped reacting because they realized they couldn't control when they got shocked. It was the other dog who was with them. And they basically just gave up and they said, okay, we're going to get shocked, so whatever. Fine. Then, this is the amazing part, then he took...
The dog stopped barking or doing anything?
Right, yeah. They basically were showing signs that they basically, you know, grew accustomed or got used to the shocks. Then he took both groups of dogs, the dogs that could control their own shocks and the dogs that couldn't control their own shocks, and he stuck them in this enclosure, which basically had two two sides of the enclosure, and it had a small, very small, a few inches high fence in the middle, a fence that any dog could easily jump over. One side had like shock plates or whatever, and one side was completely free of anything. They stuck the dogs in the shock plate side. They probably did it with rats also, but his original studies were with dogs. They stick both groups of dogs into the side that has the shock plates, and they start shocking them randomly. What happens? The dogs that, in the first condition, learn that they could control their own shocks, quickly realize, let's get out of this side, right? And they jumped over the little fence into the other side of the enclosure. But here's the amazing thing. The dogs that were getting shocked by their fellow dogs who couldn't control it, when they started getting shocked on one side of the enclosure, they didn't even try to jump to the other side. They just lay down and just started like whimpering and just basically took the shocks. Right? So he coined this term, learned helplessness, meaning they had learned to be helpless, that they couldn't help themselves. And even when they were put into a situation where they could help themselves and they could easily just jump over the fence and get into the other side, they still didn't. Because they basically had learned to give up, to not even try.
That's tied to a small stick.
Right, somebody mentioned this also. Yeah,
when they grow up, they tie them to small sticks when they're babies. So when they're adults, when they're huge, they tie them to these small sticks, and like psychologically, they're stuck. They can't move.
Because when they were babies,
that's
they're...
how they keep them there.
And oh, perfect.
These massive elephants. Like these tiny little sticks, like with thread. Uh-huh. And they're stuck.
Mm. Yeah, so somebody else, when I told somebody about the shear I was getting, they mentioned that to me. They just said, well, you know, the elephant with the stick, but...
Schaefer has a big spoon on it. You should look up where Schaefer's.
Okay, okay, so it's exactly the same thing, right? Even when you are then put into a situation where you could get out of it, where you could help yourself, you've learned to be helpless, right? So after he saw this with dogs, he basically generalized to people, right? The people who learn over time that they can't control their own situations, or maybe they have a few experiences where they have a negative experience and they feel like they're not in control. So then even in situations where they could control, they could get out of it, they could make themselves better, they just say, I can't do it, right? I'm depressed, I can't do it. It's all worthless, right? So how does this transpose into tshuva, into Yiddishkeit? So look at this Shari Tshuva. When I saw this, it's really a medrash in Koheles. When I saw it, I'm like, wow, this is amazing. You know, 800 years before, Shari Tshuva has this exact mashal. So it says Shari Tshuva in source 2, and he's quoting a medrash in Koheles. Koheles Rabbah. V'amur Rabbah Seinu Zichonim Livracha, ala inyan hazeh, on tshuva, kol zman, sha'adam chai, the whole time a person is alive in this world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mitzapeh lo l'tshuva. Hashem is waiting for the person to do tshuva. And here's where their learned helplessness comes in. Mashal, this is comparable, l'kas shalistim, to a group of thieves, shechav sham ha-melech b'veis ha-surim, who are caught by the king and they're put in jail. V'chasru machteres, they dig out an escape tunnel, right, machteres, Partzu vayavoru v'nishar echa mehem. They all escaped through this tunnel that they dug, right? Jail escape, jail break. But one guy stays. He stays in the jail. And he doesn't follow them. Ba sar beis asoar. So the jail warden comes. V'ra machteres chatura. He sees that they've dug out this escape tunnel and they've all ran out. V'ayishahu odenu atzor. And this one guy is still sitting there in the cell. Vayachos o mateo. And the warden starts hitting him. Amar lo, kasha yom. This is such a... I can't understand this. Halob ha-machteres chatura lefanecha. The tunnel is open right in front of you. All your friends just went through it. Ve'eich lo miharta himalei tanav shecha. How did you not escape from it? Right? So, it's exactly learned helplessness. This one guy learned that in jail he can't escape, and even when he's given a clear opportunity to escape, to get out of his situation, he doesn't take it, because he's learned that he can't help himself. And this is really a lot of what we work on in tshuva. So that's also, we get used to it, right? We get accustomed to it, right? Like the dogs, they got used to the shocks, right?
He literally had north to go on. People, right. You have people that prefer to be in jail, to be free.
Right, right. It's nice, right? So So we're going to get to that in a second, right? Jail is not always so bad, right? All your needs are taken care of you. You don't have to work. You don't have to... Right, yeah, exactly. Right, right, right. Right, right, exactly. So, but that's good for the point, right? Meaning sometimes we learn to get used to a non-ideal situation, and then even when we're given the opportunity to get out of it, we say, no, I like it. I like it in jail. I like it where I am. I like it.
You know, that reminds me of when in like Mitzrayim, I mean, like only like I don't know how many people actually left.
According to the Midrash, one fifth, right?
Exactly. And even though they were like in a bad situation, they were still like so dug in on that mindset. They didn't want to leave.
Exactly. Right. Right. My wife's grandmother, Allah Shalom, used to say that you can get used to hanging after a minute too. Right. I mean, even the worst situations, you get used to it because you become accustomed to them, and you don't feel like you want to get out of it. Okay, so listen to this. Listen to this, Rav Schwab, on the Nirtza. What's the Nirtza? And anybody know what the Nirtza is? The Eved Ivri, right? The Jewish Eved, right? Nirtza. Right. So not that Nirtza. The person who's a Nirtza. So it's a Jewish Eved Ivri who steals something and he can't pay back. So then he works for another Jew, for his Adon, to pay off what he stole, right? Eved Ivri, yeah? Right, I steal $100, I can't pay it back, so I work for the guy who I stole from to pay it off. Okay, after 6 years, what happens?
Scot-free. Goes back.
He goes free, right? Right, not like an Eved Kanya. A Jewish Eved goes free after 6 years. But what does the Torah tell us in Parashas Mishpatim? If he wants to stay, so what happens? Let's say he says, no, I like it where I am. I like being a slave, right? Let me stay.
Or something like that.
Good, exactly, right? So the Torah says we poke a hole in his ear, right? We take him to the delos, mezuzah, right? And we put the peg through his ear, right? The v'gishu adonav elo alokim, v'gishu ala delos, ala mezuzah, v'ratza adonav es azno b'martzeah, right? We pierce his ear to the door. So what does Rashi say? Look at source 3, right? Uma ra ozen Shebegov. Why do we pick on the ear? Right? Why do we pierce the ear? Why don't we do something to his hand? His hand is the thing that stole, or maybe his legs that ran to steal. Right? Why do we pierce the ear? Right? So what does Rashi say? I'm sure a lot of you have seen this Rashi. I didn't listen, right? I'm Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai. Ozen zo shashama al Har Sinai lo signov. Right? The ear that heard on Har Sinai don't steal. The halach leganav and went ahead and stole anyway, and he couldn't pay back, and that's why he had to be sold as an eved. Teiratzeh should be pierced. Okay, right? I'm sure you've all seen this Rashi, right? For this Rashi, it's a Gemara in Kiddushin. Okay. Yeah. So if you turn the page over to the other side, so Rav Shimon Schwab asks two simple questions, which you know when you hear them, you're like, yeah, these are really basic questions. Okay. So he says in the first underline, Vikasha, lama ma'anishim esa ozen achshav shehichlit lihisha'er ba'avdos. He has two questions on this Gemara. One, if we're punishing, if we're piercing the ear because the ear heard on our Sinai, don't steal, and the guy stole and he had to be sold as an Eved, so why are we waiting till the end of 6 years when he decides to stay to pierce the ear? We should pierce it right away. Right, right away when he steals. His ear didn't listen to the lo signov, and so we should pierce it right away. Why do we wait till the end of 6 years when he decides to stay as an Eved, even though he could go free? Right? Question one.
That's when he becomes an Eved. Before that, he's paying back his deuce.
Okay. But what's the reason that the reason that the Gemara in Kiddushin said is because the ear heard don't steal, and he stole. So when did he steal?
He's just in the beginning, but first day on the job.
Right, but he had time to pay back, you know, what he stole. Only after that did he make himself an Eved.
Okay, so you're making a good point, but that's not what the Gemara says. The Gemara says we pierced the ear because the ear heard don't steal, and he went and stole, right?
What about because I thought it was because he didn't hear that you're not supposed to work for 6 years and then go free?
So that's another sheet in the Gemara, right? Because you're supposed to be my avadim, Hashem says, and not avadim to a person, right? Exactly. So that's another sheet in the Gemara.
The one doing that.
Correct. Good. So hold that thought for a second. So that's one question, right? According to this sheet in the Gemara, if the ear is being punished for stealing because it hurt on Har Sinai, don't steal, so why do it now? Do it 6 years ago when he stole, okay? Question number two, and this is really such a star kasha, he says, Od kasha, Shemashmao salashon ozen shashama al Har Sinai, right? That's a very interesting lashon, right? The ear that hurt at Har Sinai, says Rav Schwab, who al devarim shashamu ba'aseres hadibro. So what did Bnei Yisrael, what did everybody hear on Har Sinai? The whole Torah? No, only the aseres hadibros, right? The first two from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then it was too much for them, so they said, you know, we want to hear the rest through Moshe. But either way, they didn't hear the whole Torah on Har Sinai. At the most, they heard aseres hadibros, and then Moshe learned the rest of the Torah, and then he taught it to them, right? They got it all from Har Sinai. It was all from Har Sinai. It doesn't say they heard it at Har Sinai, right? Meaning he's being very midayik in the lashon shashama, right? Ozen shashama al Har Sinai, the ear that heard, the ear of any Jew that heard on Har Sinai. So he's being midayik a lot in, right, very specifically in the lashon of shashama. So he says it's mashma that it's part of the aseres hadibros. And here's the kasha: v'hari mashma ne'amar b'aseres hadibros lo signov. Right, in Aseres HaDibros, when it says, lo signo, don't steal, what is it referring to? Is it referring to stealing money? Anybody? Lo signo?
Well, he's signo. It's
talking about Gnevas Das. Not Gnevas Das, but Gnevas
Nefesh,
right? Kidnapping, right? Lo signo in Aseres HaDibros is not talking about stealing money, it's talking about kidnapping, stealing a person, right?
Literally, so that's, or
metaphorically? No, literally. If you kidnap a person, okay? So that's a Schwab's second question. You're telling me that we punish the ear because the ear heard on Har Sinai, don't steal money, and he went and stole money, so we punch out his ear. But the lo signo in Aseres HaDibros that the ear heard on Har Sinai is don't kidnap. So he didn't kidnap, he just stole money. So how does that line up? So says Schwab, an amazing idea. I was blown away when I saw this. He answers both questions with the same answer. He says, what's happening here? Sort of what we were saying before. When, at the end of 6 years, when the Eved decides to stay and not to exercise his freedom, to actually go free and control his own life and really stay as an Eved, Rav Schwab says, at that point, he is violating the lo signo of Aseres HaDibros. How? So listen to his lashon. He says, if you start with the second paragraph at the end of the first column, va'amnam be'emes hagonev nefesh miyisrael ima gonev es hanefesh lo me'ha'adam atzmo v'lo me'aviv v'imo v'lo me'ishto. When you kidnap a person, meaning regular stealing money, so you're stealing the money or the object from the owner. When you kidnap a person, so who are you stealing from, right? So says Rav Schwab, u'me'ahechrech lefareh she'agonev nefesh ha'adam hu gonev oso me'akadosh baruch hu. If you kidnap a person, so nobody owns that person except HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a certain sense, right? Hashem created him. So, right, kinyan yitzira, right? So if you kidnap a person, you're really stealing him from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So says Rav Schwab, if you go down a few lines, uchemochen kol mi shemamshich al atzmo es matzav ha'avdus harehu over al lo signo v'amor b'aseres hadibro. So at the end of 6 years, when this Eved decides to stay as an Eved, what is he doing? At that point, he's kidnapping himself from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Amazing, right? He's being over lo signo v'aseres hadibros at that point because he's stealing himself. He's not allowing himself to break free of his avdos and to assume his own destiny. And he's leaving himself as an eved. And really what he's doing is he's kidnapping himself from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He could go free and control his own destiny and connect HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a much more significant way. And he decides, no, I want to remain an eved. And therefore, says Rav Schwab, he is being over lo signo v'aseres hadibros. He is being over kidnapping, because he's kidnapping himself from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's really learned helplessness, right? You have the ability, the Eved has the ability to go free after 6 years, and he chooses no, I want to stay helpless. I want to stay, like we said, by the JR, right? He gets used to the being an Eved. It's an easy life. I don't have to make my own decisions. I can just sit back and everything is provided for me. Yeah, maybe I can't realize my potential, but, you know, it's an easy life, so let me stay this way. I don't want to have the responsibility of making my own decisions and of having to grow and of having to, you know, to work hard. Okay? So the question is, now that we know this, that we have this inyan of learned helplessness, and it comes out in our avodas Hashem, so the question is, how do we break out of it? Right? How do we get out of learned helplessness? Okay? So listen to this. So in the dog studies by Seligman, do you know how do you think they got the dogs to actually learn how to jump over that little fence, to get them out of that learned helpless mindset? What do you think they did?
I mean, I feel like if you just show them once, just one time, showing them, like, even coaxing them to jump over, and just from that one realization, it could just flip their entire mindset around.
Okay, good. So I don't know what order they did it in, but they tried rewards, right? They tried to entice them, like, here's a nice piece of meat on the non-shock side, right? Come and get it. That didn't work. Rewards didn't work. Then they tried threats, right? We're gonna hit you more if you don't jump over. And even that didn't work. Even threats didn't work. Okay. And what else did they try? And even observed, like what you said, observed demonstrations, just showing them that they could jump over, right? Maybe, I don't know if they showed them other dogs or like a video of like another dog jumping over, right? Observed demonstrations, I don't know what that refers to. Still, even when they showed them how to do it, you know, not directly, they still wouldn't do it. They still prefer to stay on the side that was shocking them. What was the only thing that actually got them to learn how to jump over the fence and go to the non-shock side? Says Seligman, to change the dog's expectation, this is source 5, experimenters physically picked up the dogs and moved their legs, replicating the actions the dogs would need to take in order to escape from the electrified grid. So they mamish, it wasn't even enough to show them how to do it, or to show them a video, or to show them other dogs. The experimenters had to go physically take the dogs and move their legs to get them back into the motions of actually helping themselves and jumping over the little fence. Which is crazy, right? This is a tiny little fence that any dog can jump over. It was right there in front of them, no shocks, and the experimenters literally had to lead them by hand, you know, show them, actually do it for them, move their legs to get them to jump over. Right. Or they were so helpless, they basically just said, we're just staying here, we're just going to get shocked, right?
It's like those dogs that they get used to their house having a glass door, and the owners will take out the glass door, and the dog still will never, ever, even though, like, its nose will be poking out, but they'll still, in their mind, they'll say, I can't go through here.
Because they think they're going to...
There's no physical block, there's a mental block.
Right, exactly, the same thing. Right, so you have this concept, it's been shown many times throughout research, okay? So what's one Eitzah? So again, the question is, what do we do about this? How do we get out of our learned helplessness? So one Eitzah, which comes from the study, is to actually go through the motions of tshuva, of bettering yourself. Even if, this is what we talked about, I think, 2 shiurim ago, Rami Tol Shalol Lishma Balishma, that even just going through the motions, right, by the experimenters just physically making the dogs go through the motions of getting out of their situation, it actually stimulated them to then do it. So the same thing with us, right? We don't always feel the drive to do tshuva. We don't always want to do it. It's hard. But if we just force ourselves to go through the motions, at least at the beginning, then as we quoted from the Sefer Achinuch a few shiurim ago, acharei apulos nimshachim halavavos, right? That if we engage in actions of self improvement, exactly right. Then eventually our mind and our ratzon will follow that. But in many times in Avodas Hashem, as the Sefer Achinuch tells us, we just have to do it. Even though we don't want to do it, we don't feel like doing it, we just do it. Just do, you know, do tshuva, wake up early for slichos, everything. And then eventually your mind and your ratzon, your neshama will follow. Okay? And that's what we see from the dogs. When they were physically showed or physically moved to move their legs, eventually they ended up doing it themselves. Okay? Eitzah number 2, which I think is is a little deeper and maybe will help us even more is, so let's think of the experiment, right? The dogs are sitting on this side where they were getting shocks, and the other side, no shocks, low fence, but they had learned to just stay and get the shocks, right? So imagine for a minute if the dog's owner, who, you know, they were so close with and they had been raised by them and they had grown up with them, if the owner came and stood right on the other side of the fence, right? Right on the side with no shocks, right there, and said, you know, dog, whatever, Spot, come to me, it's safe here, you know, you can be safe here with me, right? So what do you think the dog would do? I mean, we don't know, but I would hypothesize that having that close relationship and that encouragement from a person who is so close to them, who they felt so and trustworthy, that would get them out of their funk and help them jump over the fence, right? Right? If you had Mamish, the owner, who they had grown up with, or they're so close with, be right there telling them, come, I'm right here, come to me, that would allow them to jump over, right? He didn't try this in the experiment, but I would assume that at least some of the dogs would actually do it, right? So that's, Rabosei, that's exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing to us, especially during this time, Chodesh Elul. You know, you're going to start Slichos for the non-Sfardim, Matzei Shabbos, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is closer to us. He's kiviyachol coming right up to us. He's coming right up to that little fence, and he's saying, right, my kinderlach, come to me. I'm right here. I'm coming close to you. I'm making myself accessible to you right here. And if we feel that, then we'll be able to get out of that learned helpless mindset, right? The fact that we can't change. We try every year to change. We you know, we accept Kabbalos and we do tshuva and then we just repeat the same things every year, right? But if we feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu standing right there on the other side of the fence, then that will help us, that will push us to break out of our mindset.
So do you see that Yitzhak from
the Torah? So the next two sources are going to highlight that. So look at source 6. The Rambam and Hilchos Tshuva, and with these two we'll end. The Rambam and Hilchos Tshuva, so every category of the Rambam, every set of halachos, he has a title for the halacha. Before Perek Aleph, Halach Aleph, he has a title just briefly describing each halacha. So each set of halachos. So in Hilchos Tshuva, in the Hakdamot, you know, one line, he says, look at source 6, Mitzvah sase achas, v'hu sheyashuv achote mecheto lifnei Hashem v'yisvada. Right, the mitzvah of Tshuva is that a person should come back, return from his sins, and say vidui, and enumerate what sins he did. And then he starts Perek Aleph, Mishnah Aleph, Perek Aleph, Halacha Aleph, Kol Mitzvah Shebetorah, Bein Asei, Bein Lo Sasei, Kim Avar Adam Al Achas Mehen, Bein Bezodon, Bein Mishkaga, Kishayase Tshuva, V'yashu Mecheto, Chai V'Svados, Lifnei Akel Baruch Hu. Right? When you do an Avera, whether it's Asei, Lo Sasei, Shogeg Mezid, when you do Tshuva, you have to do vidui. So for those who can be medayek, who can look very carefully at the Rambam, what phrase does he use both in the Akdama and in the first halacha, which seems to be a little bit muser, a little bit extra, which doesn't really need to be there? What do you think? Right, what lashon does he use both in the Akdama, which is that first line, and in Halacha Aleph, what would you say? Any guesses? No? Yashu Mecheto. Meaning what should it say? Or so honestly, there's a few diyukim here, but
what's your question?
There seems to be a lashon that he uses both in the first line, which is the Hakdama, right, and in Halacha Aleph, which seems to be a little miyusar, it doesn't really need to be there, but he dafka puts it in. Yeah, so maybe Yashu Mecheto, maybe that. But what I was... He says it both places, correct. But the question is, could he have not said that, and would it still capture what he wanted to say? So what I noticed is he says, both in the Akdama and in Halacha Aleph, Lifnei Hashem. Right? He says, Yashuv achote mechat lifnei Hashem in the Hakdama. And then in Alacha Aleph, he also says, Chayiv lisvados lifnei hakel baruchu. So let's stop for a second. Any mitzvah that you're doing, is it not lifnei Hashem? Is it not lifnei hakel baruchu? Right? How does the Ramah start Shulchan Aruch? Shivisi Hashem. V'negdi Samad. You're always lifnei Hashem. So the Ramam should say this by every single mitzvah. Chayiv to shake a lulav lifnei Hashem. Chayiv to daven lifnei Hashem. Chayiv to say kriyash ma lifnei Hashem. Does he say lifnei Hashem in every halacha? For anybody who's been through more Rambam than this? No, he doesn't, right? Here, he dafka is madgish. He says lifnei Hashem twice within the first three lines of Hilchos Tshuva. And I think the idea... Right. So maybe you could be daikin that in the difference, right? But the fact that he puts in lifnei Hashem, dafka by tshuva, what seems to me is that by tshuva dafka, we have to feel that we're doing tshuva lifnei Hashem, that Hashem, like what I described, that Hashem is mamish, he's waiting for us right there, we're lifnei Hashem, he's waiting for us right there, and we just have to push ourselves to come, to jump over that proverbial fence and come to him, right? And it's more by tshuva, because tshuva, you naturally will feel a richuk from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? Why? Because tshuva is thinking about everything you did wrong, and doing vidui, right, and actually listing all your averos. So there's a natural tendency to feel far from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I've done so much, how can you be so close? But pum fakir, the Rambam wants us to know, no, lifnei Hashem, when you're in the process of tshuva, Hashem is right there. He's right there on the other side of the fence, and he's waiting for us. And I'll end with this this amazing insight from Rav Pinkus in the Hakdama to Shabbos Malkasa. So he quotes a medrash in Shmos Rabbah about Har Sinai. The medrash says, "Amar Rabba Avahu, Am B'Shem Rabbi Yochanan, Kishenatza HaKadosh Baruch Hu Es HaTorah, at the moment when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah on Har Sinai, Tzipor Lo Tzavach, the birds stopped chirping, Of Lo Parach, not even a bird was flapping its wings, Shor Lo Ga, the ox wasn't making noise, Ofanim Lo Afu, Srafim Lo Amru Kadosh Kadosh, even the Malachim stopped their praise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah on Har Sinai. Hayam Lo Nizdazeya, the ocean stopped its currents, right? The ocean basically came to a standstill. Habrios Lo Dibru, none of the creation spoke. Ela Ha'olam Shosek Umacharish, the Yotza Hakol Anochi Hashem Elokecha. The whole world, basically all the natural world stopped, all the noise, and the call of Hashem, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, could be heard throughout the whole world. Says Rav Pinkus, it's not pshat that the whole world stopped and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu started saying Anochi Hashem Elokecha. It's that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always saying Anochi Hashem Elokecha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always speaking to us. It's just that there's so much noise, there's so much going on in the world, there's so much background noise that we can't hear that call that emanates at all times. And so at the moment of our Sinai, when all the background noise, everything that covers up our ability to hear Hashem, when all that was gone, then we heard the voice that's always coming out. Not that only came out at that point. And that's the same idea, that when we're in the process of tshuva and we're able to take a step back and get out of everything that takes us away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all the distractions, all the things that we have to be involved in our daily lives, then we'll be able to hear and to feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence in our lives, and in that way, we'll be able to jump over that little fence that, right, the Gemara says that L'asidlova, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will show the tzaddikim, the rishayim, the yetzer hara, right, it will seem like a mountain, it will seem like a little thing, right, so in reality, there's that little fence that we just need to jump over to get HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it seems to us so hard because we've fallen into this trap of learned helplessness. So Mirtz Hashem, if we can feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's standing right there on the other side of the fence, and we can hear his call, which comes out all the time, there's just so much background noise that covers it up, Mirtz Hashem, we could have a full tshuva and come to Rosh Hashanah with real zchuyos to be able to ask for whatever we need, Mirtz Hashem.